I'm Willie Miller.
Hi, I'm Seth Coe.
I'm Kevin Mathis.
Hello, I'm Jonathan Magnew.
Hi, it's Grant Hackett here.
Hi, I'm Cheryl Smith from the Wallaroo.
I'm Azuma Nelson.
I'm Gashini, and you're listening to Not the Footish.
Yes, you are indeed listening to Not the Footy Show. And we've got a slightly different show for you today because in September, Not the Footy Show turned 20 and we forgot to celebrate. So today we're going to look back on the last 20 years, look at some of our favourite interviews, some of the changes in sport, and also hear from some of our former hosts. I'm Ashley Morrison.
And I'm John Lee.
Happy birthday, John.
Yes, happy birthday to you. Wow, 20 years.
I know, it's been a long time, hasn't it?
Yeah, when I stop and think about it, it's a bit overwhelming, actually.
Yeah, I mean, we started off as a weekly radio show where we had a minimum of six guests in a two-hour show on 990 Information Radio, and that ran for 9.5 years. And then when the station went broke, we kept it going as a podcast.
We're on it 9.5 years.
Yep.
Wow. See, that blows me away that it was that long.
I was quite surprised. I went back and checked, though. So.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, the good old days.
Yep. And you needed to go into your inspirational beanbag before every show.
Well, yes, the beanbag of inspiration. It was either that or the couch of knowledge.
Okay. I'll take your word on it.
Well, first of all, congratulations, Ashley, because this is very much your beast. I feel like, passenger's not the right word, but I feel like I'm just along for the ride.
Well, you've been along for the ride the whole time, so no one else has achieved that. So you've been a major contributor.
Yeah, started out answering the phones, pressing buttons.
Throwing the odd thing in occasionally when we didn't expect it. The odd grenade.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, no, it's been fabulous, and just spend time with you as well. I mean, some of our best stuff is not on record, thankfully.
Oh, yes, exactly. But I think I was looking as well. I think we've featured over 75 sports.
Wow.
Which, you know, is kind of, and I actually stopped counting because since we've been doing the podcast, we've done a lot of other stuff that's more niche stuff that's been, I think, hopefully our listeners think has been interesting.
Oh, definitely. And I mean, the purpose of starting this whole thing, this beginning, was to give a voice to sports that didn't have a voice, essentially.
Absolutely. And one of the other aspects were very much because I'd been involved before with disability sport, so I wanted to give them a voice.
Yep.
Because the Paralympics was beginning to obviously really garner support, etc. And also we were looking to give women's sport, if you remember.
Yep.
And if you look back 20 years ago, women's sport was not where it is today.
Not
and we were we were the only people that were featuring the netball every single week. We also, the Southern Stars, as they were called then, the women's cricket team. We had the women's rugby when they were just getting going in the Western Force. So, again, there were a lot of females that we featured in sport. Claire Gabriel is a boxer who, if you remember, was the first female boxer to get into the AIS. So, yeah, we were really pushing for that as well in those early days.
We broadcast the last season of netball that the Perth Orioles played. Was it? Yes.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It was fun times.
And Cody Blay, who I was trying to get in touch with for this show, she's Cody Paris now, but she was one of the guests on the first show, then became one of the co-hosts as well. So, because her knowledge of netball was off the scale.
Well, compared to us, especially, we had no idea.
Now, she was incredible font of knowledge,
and just the incredible number of people that we've spoken to over the years from a whole range of different sports and different aspects of sport as well.
Yep, and I think we've only had one person I think refuse to come on the show.
Have we?
Yeah, I think it was Alan Border.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was in a grumpy mood that day.
Was he? It's a stock standard. A big shout-out to Alan. He's not doing terrifically well at the moment. So, we all wish him the best.
Absolutely.
And what a journey it's been. Full of a lot of laughs.
Oh, there have been a lot of laughs. They have indeed.
We'll get to some of them soon.
Yeah.
But shall we go through our top five interviews, Ashley?
I think we should, yeah. Do you want me to start, or are you going to go?
No, I think you should lead off because,
Well, there's one that's always stuck with me, and I just found this particular person a truly amazing woman, and that was Angela Madsen. Now, I don't know if you remember, she was in the U.S. and was in the military and was a basketball player and was playing mixed basketball and then went up for a shot and a guy landed on her back, broke her back. It was meant to be a routine operation where she was in, I think, 9 hours in the end and came out a paraplegic. And she admitted them being, you know, alcoholic, sleeping in the toilets at Disneyland or Disney World, whichever one it was in Florida. But then someone sort of got her into rowing, and she became, I think, the first woman to row across the Atlantic and the Indian Ocean, to go across both of them. She also was in a team of women that rowed around the British Isles, the first time that had ever been done, and the waters there are pretty damn rough.
Yeah, you don't want to fall in there.
And I think it was on the Indian Ocean trip, if you remember, when we did the interview, that she, one of the seats broke. And so she said, look, I don't use my legs, so I'll use that. And she did double shifts. And then for the London Games, she was actually had now transferred to pistol shooting. And she was just this amazing woman, so positive. And I remember the line she used. She goes, I'm not disabled, I'm differently abled. And I've told her story and I shared her interview with so many people over the years. And then, sadly, I think it was probably about 3 years ago, we were talking about her. Someone goes, where is she now? And I looked her up on the internet, and she'd been trying to row single-handedly from Hawaii to the mainland and got hit by a wave, and that was the end of her, which was really devastating.
Yeah. I mean, when we consider that we've been going for 20 years, it's quite a few of the people that we've interviewed over that period of time have since passed away. And so,
yeah. I did do, if you want to catch up with that interview, I actually did post something when she passed away. So if you just put in the search engine on Not the Footy Show, Angela Madsen, you'll find that interview and you can listen to it again. It's one of the longer ones we did because she was just such an incredible person.
And we must also say that we do have some audio of some of these interviews. Unfortunately, some of them we don't, because it all went out when the station closed and everything got locked up and thrown away before people could retrieve information they might have liked to have kept.
Yep. I mean, I've actually found, I was going back the other day on a hard drive, and I've got, because we used to put the shows out as a podcast, if you remember, back in 2008. So we were really ahead of the game back then. But I found a lot of those, and it was quite interesting listening back to some of those and some of the people we featured. And yeah, it was good.
Yeah, we got injured on duty in the Marine Corps. I was a center for the women's all-Marine Corps basketball team. I've always been athletic and in the sports. I got tripped and someone landed on my middle of my back, my lower back in the game. And then I had a surgery at the VA hospital. And our VA hospitals are teaching hospitals, so we end up with a lot of students and interns. And we basically end up being like a living, breathing cadaver for a medical student. So the students took out the wrong disc. To start out with, I was supposed to have two levels fused. Students took out the wrong disc, put the bone graft in wrong, and drilled a hole in my spinal cord during the surgery.
And that was Angela Madsen. Just a short clip from that interview all those years ago.
Yeah, quite an inspiring tale, that one.
It was indeed. And we're moving on to now one of your favourites.
My very favouritest interview is Sir Alec Bedser. We were stuck. It was an after-hours interview, so we weren't live on air. And we were sitting in that little room, and we rang him up. And he was an old man at that stage.
Oh, he was,
very old man. And the first thing he said to us, he said, oh, where are you? Where are you guys? And we're in Perth. And he goes, oh, Perth, I had my first cold beer ever in Perth at the Palace Hotel.
I remember that clearly as well, yeah.
And he was stoked. He was absolutely thrilled to be talking to us because Perth had been where he had his first cold beer. But he was such a charming man, and the way he told his stories, and like because they used to catch the boat out here.
Yep.
And he told the story about how he brought his twin brother along with him. Of course, they're twins, but his twin brother didn't come as a member of the touring party, and the touring party ate at the captain's table.
Yeah, they were in first class.
They were in first class, and his brother was like at the bottom of the boat.
I think third class or steerage, is it called?
Steerage, yeah. He was, he was in that under the water level. And he told us a story about him, how him and his brother would swap places so his brother could go up and eat the first class meals, and he'd turn up on the first class areas and the bars and all that sort of stuff. It was great.
I know, that's brotherly love, isn't it?
It is. But the one that really got me is,
I know what you're going to say.
About bowlers taking wickets and
getting the tail enders out.
Yeah. And I think he was specifically referring to one particular famous fast bowler at the time who bowled very, very fast and had an alleged chainsaw.
That's the chap he was having a go.
He used to do that chainsaw after he took a wicket. And he just said, what are you carrying on like that for? He's a number 11. You're supposed to get them out. They don't carry on like a pork chop.
Yeah, he was brilliant. He was such good fun.
He was great. Now, unfortunately, we've lost that audio many years ago, but Sir Alec Bedser, what a gentleman.
Nah, he was really, really good. Well, I know you went with your most favourite first, but I'm going to keep my probably special one to last on this occasion. But certainly one of the other ones I really enjoyed was getting hold of Sir Roger Bannister, you know, the first man to run a sub-4-minute mile. And probably more interesting, this might sound wrong, is how that interview came around. Because, again, he was getting older in age and was renowned for being a bit of a grumpy chap and didn't like giving interviews, hated it, didn't really like the media that much. And was very fortunate that he lived near Oxford, the place I don't like to talk about. But my dad was an orthopedic surgeon, as was Sir Roger Bannister, and he happened to know him. So he contacted him for me and said, is there any chance my son's in Australia? Can you do an interview with him? So he said, yeah, tell him to ring me at this time. And he was really like military, you know, you've got to ring at 5 o'clock, and if he doesn't ring at that time, then it's not going to happen. So my dad said, he's like that, you've got to do it. So I rang on the dot, and he goes, how long is this going to take? And I said, oh, you know, we like to get sort of 10, 15 minutes. He goes, you can have 10. That's it. 10 minutes. That's all. So anyway, so we agreed the time, and I thought, oh, 10 minutes. Interview is such a legend, you know. It's like I want a bit longer than that. So I kind of thought, I know what I'll do. I'll ring a little bit early and say, oh, my watch was a little bit fast. So I rang him a little bit early. So it was probably like about 4 minutes to whatever the hour that we would have agreed. Anyway, he came to the phone. We started the interview. And in the end, actually, he was wonderful and he was happy to talk. And I think the interview went about 15 minutes and he didn't say, I've got to go now, which I'd been warned that he had been known to do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was actually really charming. And for me, that was a really special guy to get the chance to talk to. And, you know, and he was doing work at the time in Africa, developing these running shoes there. And he was saying how he was amazed how, we're talking about the pronation of people's feet and all of that. So we went on a complete tangent, but yeah, very fascinating.
It's still
man.
Very much a benchmark, isn't it? The 4 minute mile. I mean, I know that records have come down and all that sort of stuff, but that's like, it's a benchmark.
Yeah.
You've got to run the 4 minute mile. If you're not even in the equation if you can't run a 4 minute mile.
I think I'd be glad to run a 5. Especially today.
Yeah. I'll settle for a 3/4 of an hour walk. Thank you.
Yes, but having obviously grown up with that legendary piece of footage of him running and breaking it, to then get the chance to speak to him was magnificent.
He was he's a different cat, isn't he?
He was indeed.
There is no race, world record race, that has been broken without some early pacemaking. There are one or two instances, Clark and Elliot possibly, who could have done the thing with what we'd call front running. But it's very, very unusual. And you don't get many middle distance records in world championships or Olympic Games. The style of having to pace yourself evenly is not really consistent with being certain to win a highly competitive race. These other races are usually won by a sprint at the end. One runner has had a little more in reserve and can manage to sprint, which of course itself destroys the even pacedness of the running. So Chris Brasher, they were long-term friends. He set the half mile at a good pace, and then Chris Chataway took over in the third lap.
Hi, I'm Ashley Jackson from the Raunchy Rhinos, from England, enjoying my time out here in India. I understand this is not the footy show, which I agree with. I wish we had back at home, to be honest, for soccer, because that is all they talk about back at home.
And that was just a little bit of a clip from that interview with Sir Roger Bannister. And hopefully we'll see if we can find a way or let you know when he was on the show so you can go back to that podcast. I'll try and work out when it was.
Okay, my number two.
Yep.
Dick Johnson, Australian race car legend. He was pretty early on in the piece.
He was.
So once again, haven't got that one. And Dick was, he's a pretty funny guy. He's quite likeable and all those sorts of things. But what stays in my memory is normally when we're doing these interviews, we get to the end of it. I've rung them up. Yeah, so-and-so will put you through, and they come on. And at the end of it, they just hang up. That's what everybody does, not Dick Johnson. Dick hung on the phone, and I didn't realise this. We'd done the interview, blah, blah, back on the panel, turned off him off the panel, whatever. And you and Darren was still doing hosting then, and you and Darren kept going with the show, and I raced down to get the next. Anyway, I looked at the phone, and someone was still on the line. I went, oh, what's going on here? I picked it up, and it was Dick. He was waiting. I said, oh, Dick, oh, thanks. Look, yeah, that's it. He goes, oh, yeah, no worries. Yeah, you need anything else? Do you want to know anything more? You know, you can free. Had a little chat with him. But he was just happy to give. He was like, oh, yeah, interview, good on you. Yeah. It was a nice, warm feeling I got from that little tiny two-minute conversation at the end of the interview. And he hung there and waited to make sure that we got everything we needed.
You know, just on that, and this is when I remember in a situation like that, we were trying to get on the show, Craig Parry. And, we were ringing him at the agreed time and he wasn't answering. And we were like, the golfer this is. And anyway, the show finished. We never got hold of him. And I was driving home after the show and my phone rang and it was Craig Parry. And I'm never forgetting, he actually said, look, I'm really sorry. We had one of my wife's relatives died tonight, and that's why I couldn't come. We were at the hospital and all of this. And he then said, but I'll come on the show next week. And I thought, whoa, what a quality human being that he actually, on the day the person's died, he rang me back and then said, I'll do it next week. And I just feel with the mention of you're telling the story about Dick Johnson, what can I do to help? There's another guy that was just truly, oh, just quality in my book.
And that was another good interview too, because he was quite a funny guy, Craig Parry.
He's a funny guy. Yeah, he was very good, yeah.
A lot of the people we got on the show were fantastic people. A lot of them. I can't think of any I'd go, he's a bit of a twat.
Yeah, I don't think we ever had anybody that was like that. I think there was actually one, and I'm not going to say who it was, but they actually had issues and were diagnosed with having trauma issues. Yeah, not long after. So I think that was why. But it was more that they were just a very angry person at the world rather than angry at us.
And look, not everybody is comfortable being interviewed. Not everybody is as open as other people can be. So sometimes interviews can be hard because the person's just, you're not getting anything back from them. And it's not their fault. It's just they're not that sort of person.
And they don't like talking about themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which has never been our problem, has it, actually?
No, I'm happy to share an opinion with anyone. That's why this show's kept going. I've had 20 years of opinions.
Well, hello, Ashley. Hello, John. It's Darren here. Darren Harper, once of Not the Footy Show. Certainly I was 20 years ago when it first started, when myself and Ash first started. I cannot believe it's 20 years. 20 years since we started Not the Footy Show. Congratulations. It's still going. Who knew, eh? Who knew? But I have very many amazing memories of my time on Not the Footy Show for the years that I did it before I was rudely chucked out of Australia and had to come back to this cold, dark place that they call England. But some of my best memories, I mean, mainly the stuff we used to do on air, I think, more than anything else. We had such good fun between me and Ash on air, and I really enjoyed that. But things like Challenge Ash, that was always a real highlight for me. Some of the competitions we used to run, the Answers Perth Glory, that was always a big favourite, I think. Me getting lots of stuff wrong, like Carmate, Carmate, and calling it Carmate. Ashley getting stuff wrong, like popping an olive. still a classic. But other things as well, it just popped into my head as well. And I remember when we were trying to promote Not the Footy Show, and Ashley came up with a load of songs for Western Force. We came up with a little songbook. So we went down to Subi Oval ahead of a Western Force game, handing out these songbooks. I remember that. That's in my memory. Fantastic. What other radio show / podcast would do that sort of work? But then there's also some other real highlights for me, like the burgers at Perth Eat. I mean, they were like top tier burgers at Perth Eat. What a place that was. And then things, you know, mistakes that you'd make, like me not listening to the head coach of Perth Wildcats. What was his name? Scott Fisher. When he was saying someone was out for the season, and I was like, oh, right, that sounds great. Well done. Top tip number one, always listen to the person that you are interviewing, because you never know what they might say. But a fantastic time had on that show. I loved working with you guys, especially with Ashley, and of course with the lovely John as well. Worked with him for a number of years at the radio station there in Perth. And I only have fantastic memories of my time in Australia and on that show. And I miss you all so, so much. Please let me come back now.
Well, that was Darren Harper, who was, of course, the first co-host on Not the Footy Show. And we had a lot of fun with him. I must admit, when he gave those memories, John, I'd forgotten some of the things we had. Like, you remember the prize for the Answers Perth Glory? Where you literally, we'd ask a question. All you had to ring in and say, Perth Glory, you got two tickets to the game. And then we had Chicken Treat Trivia.
Yes.
I'd forgotten. Who the Ballantines are you?
I remember that. Yes.
Where you won a six-pack of Ballantines and cola. And then we had Celebrity Ping Pong. I'd forgotten about that one. And then Challenge Ash was the one. Remember, he was always the... People would phone in and, oh, man. He put me under a lot of pressure with that one.
He loved segment, didn't he?
Oh, Darren, you know, the like, segment Harper.
And running. I love me running.
We got to share the story. So when we had the theme songs for every sport, like a little bit of music, and the idea was that if you were listening to the show on the radio, it was a trigger so that when you heard this music, you knew we were going to talk about that sport. And when Darren had left us, we were trying to find the athletics music. Could not find it anywhere.
Nowhere. Where's the athletics music? Where's the athletics?
What did he save it as?
Running. It was just called running.
And I'm glad he did bring up the Carmate, Carmate, which was good.
That was fun. And
he did ring up popping the olive as well.
I think there might be some audio available. If I can find it, I'll stick it on the end of this episode.
That was the only time I've ever lost it on air.
Oh, and you did lose
it.
I
couldn't speak. I was crying. Yeah, I couldn't speak. I think the closest I came to that was with Ian Gillan as well on when we were doing the Perth Glory Youth Team games. But that's a story for another day.
Oh, well, number three.
Number three. Okay. I'm going to go with a gentleman we interviewed, and I can't remember the name of the company, Sam Goodwin, who was involved in sports marketing. And if you remember, his company was brought in to try and help Cricket Australia after the sandpaper gate.
Oh, God.
But the thing, forget that.
Yeah.
What really impressed me was some of the things that he was saying about how sport needs to market itself. Like, for example, he was saying, and we said this at the beginning of this show, We were here for a lot of second-tier sports because the premier sports, they got their publicity, they got media coverage throughout the time. And one of the things he was saying there is you have to remember if you're employing a marketing person or a media person in a second-tier sport, they couldn't get a job in the top-line sports. So you're already employing someone who is probably second-rate to what you actually need. And he said, you need to look at whether it's more viable to actually contract that out to experts rather than accepting someone who isn't up to the task or is not good enough. And I've never forgotten that. I think there's so many sports could learn a great deal from that. And also, we're going to hear a short clip here again because I thought this was gold where he was saying how so many sports think they sell the TV rights and then it's just going to be the gold will come pouring in.
You can't let somebody else be responsible for your brand. You've got to own that. And you've got to take responsibility for how you present yourself. You let a TV sort of TV company present you. Well, all they'll really do is they'll present their broadcast of you. They'll try and get people watching it. That's fine. They've paid the money. But it's not necessarily saying anything about you as a sport, as a brand, as an entity. And it's not going to help you attract followers and fans that are passionate. So, yeah, there's a much greater level of depth to be gone into than purely just, yeah, we're on TV now.
So that was Sam Goodwin. Just, and hopefully you found that interesting. And again, I'm sure if you go in the search engine on notthefootyshow.com, you'll find the interview with Sam, and you can go back and listen to that again in full.
My number three, local lad, Andrew Ladawi.
Oh, Andrew, yeah. Break the boundary.
Andrew is a cyclist, but not as you know it. He's a hand cyclist. Andrew...
But he had been a mountain bike rider, remember? Yeah, and then had an accident.
Lost the use of his legs.
Snapped his spine as he came off, yeah.
Yeah, but didn't let that hold him back, did he?
No way.
He competed in a thing known, a bicycle race known as a Cape to Cape, between Cape Naturalist and Cape Lewin. And it's a mountain biking type arrangement through bush tracks and all of the stuff. He competed in that. In a hand cycle.
Was the first to do it in a hand cycle.
First, and he actually came in one day and showed us his hand cycle. He had it on the back of a trailer. And it's this thing you lie down in and pedal with your hands.
Yep,
your
so you had a chest plate that you rest your chest on. And I remember him saying in that interview how he was so excited he'd had it and it cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
And it had come from Germany. And of course, what he'd forgotten was when you go through the water in that, he'd been on a mountain bike before and it just all splashed up in his face.
Yeah. He, inspirational guy. Like, he was mad as a cut snake. I reckon he's a good fella and just sheer perseverance.
Yeah, and what he's done now for the community. So up in the hills in Western Australia, in Perth, he put the first, mountain trial bike trail for people with a disability. And he's managed to get the money now. There's not just the one bike that he had. He's got more out there. It's called Break the Boundary. And he even has, I don't know how you'd describe it, but it's a sort of piece of equipment for... If you couldn't ride a bike even or whatever, you can go in a harness and they can push you through the trail.
Oh, wow.
So you actually get to experience the trails, which a lot of people with disabilities in a wheelchair wouldn't be able to do. And I know that one of the bikes he's got out there now has that you can sort of flick it to have a bit of power to get up the hill. And I was talking to one of the guys out there, he goes, oh, this one's great, it flies. So it is fantastic. And I mean, if ever there was a guy that deserved an award for public service, Andrew Ladawi would be top of my list.
Yeah, top fella.
It's quite surprising the types of trails that we can actually access are very similar to the existing mountain bike networks. And yeah, the non-disabled community has really jumped on board. There's been a lot of support. We have a range of volunteers. We have also a few regular support riders that are dead keen on coming out on board to help us out with some of the manual lifting, things like transferring and picking us up if we do sort of take a bit of a tumble. And, yeah, I mean, we really do rely on the great amount of bike community, and we just feel like we're just part of that family now. It's just it's almost common knowledge that adaptive mountain bikers are just sort of doing what mountain bikers do.
Hi, I'm Zocco Cullerton, and you're listening to Not The Footy Show.
So my memories of Not The Footy Show, firstly, were probably Daniel Ricciardo. I'm a big F1 motorsport fan, and being able to interview a local Perth Duncraig product was pretty cool. Particularly, we got the chance to hear from Daniel really early on in his career, probably before most people really knew who he was outside of real motorsport enthusiasts. So getting to speak to Daniel as he was sort of coming up through the ranks, he was going well over in Europe in the junior formula, and we ultimately got to speak to him when he, you know, got his big break with Red Bull and obviously their junior team to start with. So that was pretty exciting. And as well, getting the chance to be over in Vancouver 2010 for the Winter Olympics. I remember Ash, you'd crossed over to me whilst I was there, and it was a great Olympics for Aussies for starters. So the day I got there, was able to see Tora Bright receive her gold medal for the snowboard, and then Lydia Lassila ultimately won for Australia in the aerial skiing. But memories of Vancouver were obviously, it was being hosted in Vancouver, Canada, and ice hockey's, you know, a religion over there for them, and just the final day. It was poetic, the final day of the Winter Olympics, Canada versus the USA for men's ice hockey gold. You can't script it any better. And then on top of that, Canada wins it in overtime with a golden goal. So the city and the country as a whole just went absolutely bananas. So that was a pretty cool experience, and to be able to cross back to yourself and John in the studio for that was pretty memorable. And yeah, I guess speaking of John, he was the other sort of three musketeers whilst we were there in the studio together. And, John was always good for a bit of a laugh, particularly when we spoke hockey. John would certainly get on his little soapbox and talk about his hockey exploits. So great that, John's been part of it for such a long time. And it was great working with both yourself, Ashley, and John over the years.
And that was Michael Fontaine, who was host of Not The Footy Show for a while as well.
I'd suggest the best dressed man ever associated with our podcast.
Or without a shadow of a doubt. I think he was definitely there, but he did work in the hotel game in those days, Image was everything. But I also think he was probably our longest co-host apart from you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I reckon he did it probably longer than Darren. I don't think anyone else quite was there as long as he was, but... As we heard, he enjoyed his time.
Oh, he's a fun fella, Michael. Always had a laugh. Okay, number four?
Yeah, number four. I'm going to go now with Lord Coe.
Ooh.
Oh, yes. Just basic Seb as he was in the early days. And I remember this again was fortunate we managed to get hold of him when he was very, very busy, actually, in the lead up to the London Olympics. And what a lovely man he was. And again, so willing to give of his time and, you know, offered to give more after the interview. And it was just fascinating to talk about his running career, you know, then going into politics.
Athletics career.
What did I say? Running, yeah. It's Darren Harper. He's got it in my brain. Well, he was a runner, though.
Yeah, he was. True.
and then also how he happened to be from Sheffield but support Chelsea. And he did explain that one, because that was something that I know a lot of people were like, how can you live in Yorkshire and support a London club?
My memories of it are, it sounded like he was an administrator that had the interests of the athletes in heart.
I think he's shown that now being head of the... International Athletics Federation.
And he's putting pressure on the Olympic movement for athletes to get more recognition, i.e. money.
Yeah, but sadly, of course, the IOC wouldn't like that.
Oh, I'd say that there's people working to sideline him within those organisations.
Well, there were a lot of people. I think the general public, as we talked on another podcast, wanted him to become the head of the IOC, and I think they felt he was the man that would carry it into the modern era. Yeah, we'll wait and see whether the person they elected will do that. But I had a lot of time for Lord Coe, especially since, you know, that interview, but also what he's done since then with international athletics, which was in a real mess before he took over.
You know, I am a son of sport. I have been involved in sport for significantly more than half my lifetime, either as a competitor or as an administrator, or and now as a chairman of an organizing committee. It's what I do, and I fundamentally believe that sport really, as Nelson Mandela has so famously been quoted, really does have the power to change the world. And I want to use sport, not just domestically, but internationally, to change attitudes, through the Paralympic Games, to disability in the community. I want it to change attitudes towards health and health-related fitness. And those of us that have been involved in sport for years know that in all our communities, it is often the hidden and often unsung social worker.
Hi, I'm Justin Langer, and you're listening to Not the Footy Show.
My number four? This guy's story just amazed me. Kevin Alderton. Kevin was a downhill skier. He was a blind downhill skier. Just let that sink in for a minute. Blind downhill skiing. And he had the most amazing story. He set the world record for speed.
Yeah.
And once again, one of these interviews that we don't have the access to. It was a phenomenally fast speed from memory. It was over 100 kilometres.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was around 150, 160. Yeah. I might be wrong, but it might have been 140, but it was fast.
It was real fast. It was real fast for a person that can see where they're going.
Yeah.
And he couldn't. But what was most amazing, the feat in itself is one thing, but his backstory, he wasn't born blind. He went blind later on in life, but he was a...
He'd gone to help a girl.
He was a Royal Marine, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was in the military, and he'd gone out for the night.
Him and his mate.
Yeah. They were leaving a nightclub, and this guy was beating a girl up.
And they stepped in and stopped it, and the guy hit him on the head.
No, he grabbed him from behind with his fingers in his eyes, if you remember.
And poked him.
And they called the bouncer to get help, and they brought more people who beat them up.
Yeah.
And then he sneezed on the way to work the next day, and that was the last time he was able to see.
He was driving in his car, sneezed, and lost his eyesight. That in itself is a staggering story, with the backstory to it of him helping this woman and all that sort of thing. And then to ski downhill at 150 kilometres an hour? Man, he was crazy as.
Yeah, and I remember him saying, he said, well, at least I can't see where I'm going.
He was a really fabulous interview, but his drive was incredible. I mean, obviously he was a driven person to be in the state, be participating in the military at the level he was participating. He wasn't just a regular infantryman. This guy was seriously highly trained individual.
Yeah. Now, he was inspiration. And again, as we heard with Angela Madsen, after the accident, he went through a really black, dark period of his life. But the wonderful thing was he came out the other side and then he'd achieved this. And hopefully he's still having a great life since we spoke to him, because obviously I don't know where he's ended up now, but that was a pretty amazing story.
Hey everyone, it's Olivia Vivian here, former co-host of the Not the Footy Show, and I just got to say, massive congratulations on 20 years. How good. Some of my favourite times on the show was actually just witnessing the relentless everyday passion for all sports. The statistics, the conversations, the fact that it was trailblazing in the stance that it gave all sports a chance to shine in the spotlight, and that memory will never fade. So congratulations, and here's to 20 more years.
And, of course, another one of our co-hosts there, and that was the Olympian Olivia Vivian, who now is doing wonderful things on television with what do they call it, where she's doing those obstacle course things?
Oh, ninjas and stuff.
Yeah, she's a world-renowned ninja.
Now, she... Because Olivia's, when we first met her, she's not a huge human being. She's a tiny, slight thing.
Well most gymnasts are not that big.
Yeah, I mean, but you don't get the impression that he's a powerful, strong human being.
I did.
Well, she's awesome, Olivia, what she's managed to do with her career, and certainly driven person. She was...
Yeah, it's fantastic to see her go out and thrive and manage to find a niche for the skills that she had, having put all those years into gymnastics.
Oh, I hope she's getting some reward for it, because gymnastics doesn't pay a lot, just quietly.
I don't think it paid anything, to be honest.
So, you know, she put years and years and years of work into getting where she is, so she deserves some reward for it.
And she was always great fun, I must admit, on the show. Oh, always enjoyed having her on.
Yeah, bright, sparky little personality.
Yeah. You know,
so, thank you, Olivia.
Thanks for the birthday wishes.
Yeah, you got a number?
Number five?
Yeah.
I think you know who this is going to be.
I do.
Yeah, he's
Gordon Banks!
You got it. Well, Gordon Banks, who was my childhood hero. And we were so lucky to speak to him on a couple of occasions. And he also was very kind enough to say, I'll meet up with you in the UK. And they say you should never meet your heroes, but I did. And he was everything and more that I could have wished for. Well, I had a coffee with him and his wife, with my wife, and just what a wonderful man.
He's still absolutely revered in England, isn't he?
Yeah.
He is like a god.
Yeah, and I mean, his record for England, I think they only lost 3 games from memory that he played, when he played. And then, of course, his career was shortened with the car crash where he lost his eyesight in one eye. And that was funnily how we got to meet, because I told him the story of how I was at school. I think I was about 7 or 8 years old, and he was my hero. And I happened to cry when I heard the news that his career was over, which, of course, you don't do that, or you didn't do that in the 70s in a all-boys boarding school. And especially over a footballer, you know, it might have been, you know. And basically, I got the crap kicked out of me by some of the seniors for crying over Gordon Banks losing his eye. And when I told him that story, he wrote me a letter which I still treasure to this day, because there was no emails. Well, there was email, but he only knew the address to send it to. And he just wrote me this letter saying, you know, if you're ever in the UK, let's catch up. And, you know, he's the first man that they built a statue, first goalkeeper in the Western world to have a statue built in his honour, which that in itself was pretty damn special. But what an absolute legend of a player, and in my book, legend of a man. I absolutely adored him.
Yes, and of course, you made me retire his sting when he passed away.
I did. Well, I just didn't think it was right to have him talking from the other side.
Yeah, fair enough.
It might throw some of our listeners.
And that, unfortunately, is another one we don't have, isn't it? That interview?
No, I do. We do have that. Well, so we can play a clip now. Yeah.
And I raced back into the centre of the goal, and Pelly now leaping up to head it. He punched it downwards. And this is where the hardest part of the save was. It wasn't going to, the ball wasn't going to drop alongside my dive. It was going to bounce about a couple of yards in front of my dive. So now I've got to leap backwards a little bit. Reach backwards a little bit, and as I'm reaching back for it, it's the top of my hand, and it bounces. It's the top of my hand as it's coming up, and it's now going upwards. And I thought it was a goal because I'm breaking my fall on the hard surface. I don't really know exactly where it's gone, but the momentum of the save brings my lower part of my body round, and now my head comes round, and now see the ball bounce behind the goal in this almighty Royal Stadium, and of course I've made the save.
Okay, so your last one now. Who are you going to go with?
Oh, you'll remember this guy. It was an absolute joy, this interview.
Oh, I think I know who you're going to go with.
Andrew Jennings.
Oh, yes.
Now, Andrew is a journalist.
Who
was.
Sadly, yeah. He's passed away as well.
He was in a multi-decade fight, I would call it, with FIFA, with Blatter, with, well, who was before?
Yao Havelange.
Yao Havelange. He went after football, and he went after it big time, the corruption and all the skullduggery and badness that goes on within the world of FIFA. And when we interviewed Andrew, before we actually started the interview, he said to us,
yeah, I remember this.
Don't worry about anything I say. I've said this all over the world on all sorts of different platforms. And they've never sued me. No one's ever sued me. Don't worry about anything I say. You'll be sweet.
But also he was a lawyer, qualified lawyer.
Yeah, he was.
And he said, I have a lawyer on each shoulder before I open my mouth. But he was unbelievable.
And of course, this was at a time when Australia was bidding for the World Cup, to host the World
Correct.
Cup. And we'd spent a huge amount of money on our bid process and...
Way too much.
That's a whole, we could do a whole show on that. But the frankness he spoke with and the lack of fear because he was right and he knew he was right.
Yeah, and he was telling us, if you remember, to doorstop the CEO.
Yeah.
And he goes, and these are what you need to ask.
This is how you do it, lads. And he was scathing of Australia's involvement and us being little pawns pushed around by other bigger forces within the FIFA world.
Yeah. And I think he exposed Australia's football naivety in that one interview.
He did.
Yeah.
Fair to say he wasn't a big fan of Les Murray.
No.
And we'll leave that one there for the time being. If you can find that interview, you should go back and have a listen to it.
Yeah, I'll have to check whether that one's on the website. I think it might have been a little bit early.
Yeah, I think that one, well, I can't find it. It definitely would have gone. It was definitely on the old servers. So
yeah.
When those servers went, that was the end of it, unfortunately.
Well, if it does, read the copy on the website if I manage to find it.
Look him up and read the stuff he wrote.
Well, read his books.
His books are fab, because he also had a crack at cycling too, didn't he?
Yeah, and the IOC.
And the IOC, yeah. In fact, they could do a movie about him the same way they did a movie about the cycling dude. You know, the guy that chased Lance Armstrong
yeah.
around? It'd be a similar sort of tale as
it
that.
It would be, yeah.
But, yes, that's my five and your five.
Yeah, very different five.
The happy of birthdays to Not the Footy Show, and a huge congratulations to you, Ashley Morrison. I was privileged to be introduced to Ashley via my association with the American Football Club here in Western Australia. And, of course, with Ashley always being someone who championed for lesser-known sports to get a little more of the spotlight, we started what has become a friendship that I treasure greatly. Being invited to be a part of Not the Footy Show was my first introduction to radio broadcasting and was a dream come true. Thrust firmly into the deep end alongside someone with such professionalism, experience, and broadcasting and interviewing acumen as Ashley was a little bit intimidating to say the least, but also so much fun. And I really value and treasured my time on the show, working alongside such amazing characters as John, who produced and co-presented the show while I was there, and of course, the Honey Monster, who from memory was a very young and keen addition to the team while I was there. Then, of course, there were also the amazing athletes that I was lucky enough to co-present alongside in Olivia Vivian and Anna Flanagan. And I often think back of those times with such fondness. When I look back, two memories that stand out above all others, there's two of them. The first being that I was so privileged to be a part of interviewing one of the greatest to play the game of rugby in Brian Habana while he was still a player. What an absolute treat that was. It's something I'll never forget. The second memory that stands out to me is the look that Ashley would give me any of the many times that while we were interviewing a guest, my inexperience perhaps kicked in and my questions became longer and longer and more convoluted. I could feel the heat radiating from that look, and I knew that but the good thing is that I knew it did come from a place of wanting excellence, and, you know, that was excellence for the show, for our guests who had given their time to be a part of that show, and also for myself in becoming a better broadcaster and interviewer, and that's just who Ashley is, and I greatly respect him for that. Ashley, you were and are an incredible broadcaster, a knowledgeable researcher, a champion of all sports, a patient and very kind teacher, and a dear, dear friend to many. It was a privilege to be a small part of the Not the Footy Show's 20 years, and I wish you the very, very best. And just quietly, can I please have your phone contacts one day when you eventually retire?
And that was Ryan Cope, one of our former co-hosts as well. And I feel pretty bad, actually, John, that I was apparently such a bad person giving him the stink eye during interviews. But I'm glad he's doing really well on the breakfast show of, is it Margaret River Radio or Radio Margaret River? And great voice for radio, though, Ryan had.
Yeah, definitely. And he's got the wedding DJ business down
there.
Oh,
yeah, which has won awards as well for its work. Yep.
Cranking along there. So if you need a DJ for a wedding, hit up Ryan.
Yep, exactly. But, again, a great contributor.
He actually gave me an opportunity to commentate and broadcast my one and only game of American football up at Arena Joondalup up there. It's quite an interesting evening, that one.
Yeah, he loved his gridiron.
Oh, I loved it. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's how he came to the show, actually, because he was talking about that, him and Dave Genford, I think it was, or Genford. And then, yeah, we said, right, come on, come on. And he came on and he was brilliant. Yeah, really, really good.
Well, a lot has changed in 20 years, hasn't it? When we spoke about what was our reason for getting in, starting this program, or your reason. And you look back now and think, the world has definitely changed. And for a start, women's sport hardly got talked about.
Yeah, it didn't.
At all. And you certainly made a point of going out and, you know, engaging with female sports stars and sporting organisations and giving them an opportunity that just didn't exist.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was interesting because if you look back to probably just before we came on air or ran that same time, you'd had the Matildas had to do a nude calendar, to raise money. And you had Fitzgerald, the squash player. She as well had to do a nude thing. Remember, she wrapped herself in cling wrap.
Yeah.
So it just showed how women were having to sort of resort to such things in order to try and get some form of financial support or even to get media coverage of any type whatsoever. And I think it's good that they've got the coverage they are. There's some things I think I'm still not sure they've actually got quite right. So, for example, one of the things I think that women should have done with some of the sports, not all of them, don't get me wrong, but I think there's some areas, don't just follow the men. Create an image of your own.
Yeah.
Because I'm not saying that the men have actually got it right in all cases. And I think sometimes some of the things you're trying to do by just following the male model is actually not the best model for women's sport, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and the same goes for, see, even after all this time, I'm uncomfortable using the term disabled sport because we know, we've spoken and asked people about using terms like disabled. I can't remember who it was that said, I don't think of it as disabled, it's differently abled.
Well, that was that Angela Madsen.
And some of the differently abled athletes that we've had on have just been amazing. Madison De Rosario.
Yeah, look just at what she's gone on.
Absolute legend. And do you remember
the first athlete with a disability to be a Barbie.
Oh, really?
They made a Barbie doll of it, yeah.
Mate, that first time we interviewed her, and she was describing exactly what her disability was and how it affected
her. How many operations she'd had.
She's basically got no back. It's just a big bit of steel that runs from her neck to her hips, isn't it? I mean, it's incredible what the journey
she was only about 15 or 16 then.
Yeah, and she's gone on to become an absolute star. I can't even remember. Or the weightlifters, remember the two young guys?
Yep, Nang Noyan and Ben Wright.
That's it. Fabulous. They came into the studio, wheeled them in there, and they came.
Well, Nang is now playing badminton. He's now soaring in the badminton stakes, And Ben, of course, won a bronze at the Commonwealth Games.
Fabulous couple of gentlemen. I really enjoyed them. All of the differently abled athletes we had on were just hugely inspiring. Who had great stories to tell.
Yep. No, they were. I mean, we've had so many of them. And the Wheelcats, remember, we had them. And the Rollers. We followed them for a long time.
The Rollers.
Justin Everson, Sean Norris, Michael Hartnett. Yeah, I mean, there was just loads of them.
And, you know, look at, has disability sport, is it better off now? Or is it still relatively in the same place it's always been?
I think some of them are getting, they're getting a little bit more publicity, but it's probably in a similar spot to hockey, where it only gets the limelight when, you know, there's an Olympic Games comes around or a World Championships and they actually are successful in it. I don't think that they get the coverage all the year round when they should be.
Yeah, wheelchair rugby. The rugby guys, wheelchair basketball you mentioned, just incredible. Absolutely incredible. And all of those athletes, great stories and fabulous to talk to.
And if we've forgotten you, we apologise, but we've had so many. We do thank you for being part of the 20 years and we do appreciate you giving up your time.
Absolutely. Yeah, just amazing.
On a negative spin in the last 20 years, I think one of the things, you know what I'm going to say, is I think how what has been worrying is how we've seen administrations within sport blow out. And as a result of that, you've seen the costs for the average person to play go up. And that, I think, is something that is a big concern. And as you know, I've been saying the problem we have is, a lot of the sports rely on government funding rather than self-funding. And then the government funding model is heavily flawed in that it's based on either Olympic or World Cup success in those various sports. And if it's not related on that, it's related on participation numbers. And as we know, and I've spoken to people in endless sports who all admit we fudge our participation numbers just so that we get more money. And the government is so dumb, or the people working in the departments of sport actually don't want to address this and go to the government and say, look, this is not working. They're just like, oh, yeah, we all know they all do it, but we just hand the money out. I don't think that's a good way to operate.
I mean, sport's not supposed to be a business. Sport is not supposed to be a career. But we've turned that into, it's been now turned into careers. It's lost a lot of its soul. Now, going back when we were kids, yes, you could have played for Australia or, you know, opened the batting, or there was still those sort of dreams and aspirations were still there. But as kids, we didn't see those dreams and aspirations as being a living.
No, correct. And those people had other jobs.
Yeah, but now they do. And we're not even talking about people who's playing for Australia or representative stuff. We're talking about people who are playing in some rubbish T10 tournament in Dubai, which I happened to watch some of last weekend. That money would be better spent at grassroots cricket than being a toy plaything for has-been cricketers. I mean.
Well, that's the other thing. I think you've seen that there's so much money now in sport that you're not seeing people retiring when they probably should. They're hanging on for that final paycheck. And also we're seeing the people not getting rid of people when they should, because it's very difficult and they go for the safety because it's all related to the money. And, you know, the centralized programs that you have in a lot of these sports, I think, are extremely detrimental.
Well, remember when we had Norman running the Australian run, I can't remember his first name. Black Panther. Dude. You know, stood next to the Black Panthers.
Oh, yeah, Peter Norman.
Peter Norman. And remember, when we talked to him, he was talking about the idea.
Oh, we spoke to his nephew. Did we speak to him?
Yeah, we did. Because he was talking.
That's right, we did.
Yeah, we did. He was close to making my list. But he talked about the idea that no one had broken his record. No Australia, until very recently.
Yeah.
No one had broken his record. And he was bemoaning the fact that for all of the opportunity these modern athletes have, and for all of that's given to them, and training facilities, every advantage they could possibly have, they still can't run faster than him. That he did it off his own back, became, you know, a world-class
Olympic
athlete.
Olympic silver medalist.
Olympic silver. And then because of what he did on that dais, he was sidelined by the Australian sports community. And let's face it, it was administrators that sidelined him. It wasn't other runners. It was the administrators who got egg on their face. And he was a fantastic story. But going back to that idea of you can have all these programs and have them spend all this money and do all these things that you think are great, and they actually don't make much difference at all. They actually really do not make much difference. The best will always be at the top of the tree. Whether they're, it won't matter how many training programs or whatever, you still only got 11 places in an Australian cricket team. So you're only ever going to, regardless of how many wonderful players you have in your country, you're still only going to get 11 in there, and the best will still be the same best as whether you'd had those programs in place or not. Don Bradman was always going to play Test cricket, mate.
Yep, true.
And, you know, we just invest too much time and money on stuff that doesn't matter in sport, and generally that comes back to administrators.
Yeah, sport is there to be enjoyed, just as this show was hopefully there to be enjoyed for the last 20 years.
My name's Anna Flanagan. I'm a former member of the Hockey Roos, and also I did work experience for Not the Footy Show in my early 20s. I was studying journalism, and Ashley kindly said yes for me to coming in, press the buttons while they talk. I made so many mistakes. I think the technology has probably vastly improved now from back when I was doing it, but it was such an amazing experience. I can't thank Ashley enough for allowing me to learn from him and also to talk about different stuff. And minority sports, and being someone who played a minority sport, it was great insight, and I really appreciate everything that he has done by continuing this show, and I'm excited that it's 20 years, so congratulations, Not the Footy Show.
And that was Anna Flanagan, the former Hockey Roo, who also was a co-host, as she said, came in for a bit of work experience.
Yeah.
She claims she pressed a few wrong buttons. I don't think it was that bad, do you? I don't remember her getting anything horribly wrong.
Not horribly. not horribly, so we got taken off air by ACMA or anything. But, no, she's lovely, Anna.
Yeah.
She signed a shirt for my daughter. I've got the old Anna Flanagan signed Hockey Roo shirt. And man, as a player, she could play. She was lobbing overheads 50 metres up the field. And I don't think there were women doing that at that time. They are now, but
yeah, there weren't many.
She was a dead set jet.
And also her flicking initially was, you know.
Oh, yeah. No, she was a great player. And good luck to whatever's happening, Anna. Hope you're having a good time.
Well, I should probably now just acknowledge those who did co-host with us over the years.
All of them? Because you haven't been able to get in touch with everybody, have you?
No, I tried some of them, but haven't heard back. And so we've heard from Darren Harper. We mentioned Cody Blay, or Cody Paris, as she is now. We've heard from Michael Fontaine. There was one, and I must send a real shout-out for this because I missed this, but Clint Ford, who hosted with us, passed away earlier this year. It was while I was in India for the Hockey India League, and I completely missed that. And it was only when I was trying to find him now that I found out that he passed away. So our commiserations with Clint's family, and we're sorry that it's come so late.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that. That's sad.
No, I wasn't, So that very, very sad. Then Anna Flanagan and Olivia Vivian, who we've heard from. There was Simon Orchard. Came in as well.
Yeah, okay.
So we gave him a bit of a break. Dan Israel.
Oh, Dan. Yes. I forgot. Oh, hey, Dan.
Yeah, we actually had Alan Dunlop came in for a couple of shows, and a guy called Paul Thompson had a go as well. And then, of course, there's the Honey Monster.
Oh, who's gone on to bigger and better things since then, hasn't he? Hey?
Well, we should say his real name, really, shouldn't we? Or will he always just be the Honey Monster?
Oh, to us, he'll always be the Honey Monster. I don't know. Would his current bosses be that happy to be?
Oh, remember, yeah, they didn't want him to have anything to do with us the minute he landed that job. Yeah, we got cut.
That was out of there. I think he knows who he is. He knows who he is, and I think he'll be happy that we did give him the big shout-out.
Thanks, Mitch.
I don't think you'll be getting any Christmas cards from Adam Simpson this year, but then anyway, we'll leave that.
No, but look, thanks everybody for listening for the last 20 years and reading what we've written. We hope you've enjoyed it as much as we have, and we're going to keep going. It's not over now.
Are
we? We're just celebrating. We're getting, not now, but next year we'll be keeping going, because we've got to reach that 600 shows. We're very close to that.
Are we?
We are indeed.
Oh, okay.
So that's the goal. 600. Next goal, yeah.
All right. We're going to be doing this in another 20 years' time, aren't
we? I don't mind. Thanks, John, for everything over the last 20 years.
No, thank you. I've been very much just an admirer and an onlooker to this whole 20-year thing. And the people that you've exposed me to is just amazing. The opportunity to talk to some of them. I mean, the opportunity. We forgot Azuma.
Oh, yeah, of course, yep.
Who came into the studio. I met Azuma Nelson, and he was a beautiful man. He just smiled and was happy. He was fabulous. Hey, we could go on for ages, couldn't we?
We could, yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for your company, everybody.
Thank you.
Some people are on the fence. They think it's all over.
See ya. We'll be back next week.